Welcome to the Wired on Development interviews. This is episode 5.
Get Wired on Development!
I had heard mutterings about medic therapy many years ago from a parent of a young child I was treating. At the time, I thought it looked interesting, but my focus was on NDT, and I didn't follow it up. So when Joanne Weltman contacted me and offered to share more about it on a Wired on Development interview, I was intrigued. Of course, as it goes with these things, when you're paying attention to them, suddenly it was a topic popping up in Facebook groups, and since then I've seen mixed responses about it posted by various therapists. It's always good to get the inside scoop from someone who comes from a similar background to you. And with Joanne's background in more mainstream pediatrics, I thought she would be the perfect person to delve into CME and help us understand where it fits within our usual scope of practice. Joanne has been super generous with her time in sharing her knowledge and experiences. She's done this interview and she's also shared some videos and photos in the case study section of the Clinical Corner, which I highly recommend you check out. I know you're going to benefit from listening to her insights as much as I did. Enjoy. Welcome to Wired on Development, Joanne Weltman. It's a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much for just coming forward to share a little bit about CME with us. And I'm always interested in how people get to where they are at and where it'll start.
I'm very excited to share Cuevas Medic with everybody. So when I was about 16 years old, like many students, I had to make a decision as to what my career path was going to be. And I wanted to go into the medical field, and I always wanted to do pediatrics. So I enrolled in the University of Witwatersrand Rand in Johannesburg, South Africa, and graduated there in 1991, and was very, very fortunate to spend the next 2 years at the General Hospital rotating through all the different areas of pediatrics. I then immigrated to San Diego, California, where I came in contact with a few OTs who started teaching me a little bit more about sensory integration that I didn't know much about. And then I moved all the way to a place called Auckland, New Zealand, where I spent 2 years working in a conductive ed school, but it wasn't pure conductive education, it was adapted. So we had physio, OT, speech, all running the program. And it was fantastic because the kids got quite a bit of intensive all-day training. And I thought this was the way to go. So when I got to Toronto, I thought I have to find conductive education and carry on down that path. But there wasn't anything. So I happened to go and visit a colleague of mine she's a colleague now. She was working at a school, and I heard some wonderful things about this technique she was using called Cuevas Medic, or it was at that time called Medic Therapy. And I saw it, and I knew that this was one of the best things I'd ever seen. And I had to do it. So in 1997, I got myself into the level 1 certification course. And a year later, quickly got myself into the level 2. And then in 2003, I was one of the first 3 people in the world to do my level 3 certification. It was actually an intensive month-long program that we did. And all this time, I was working at an early intervention program in Toronto. At that time, there was only 1 therapist per family. So we had to be a little bit of everything. We had to be a speech therapist, an OT, and a physiotherapist. And that, working in the early intervention services, made me the holistic therapist I am today. And I still, to this day, practice with a very open mind. And I never, never narrow my thinking, even though CME is one of my specialties.
So what attracted you to it? Like when you said you first found out about it, what was it that was so interesting for you?
You could see straight away that it made a difference. It was intensive. It was, you could see the changes happening in front of you. It was so effective, and it just made sense. It made sense from an anatomical point of view, from a neurological point of view. It was was what I was looking for to make a difference in the children that I was working with.
Do you want to go into a little bit more detail about what it actually looked like, what you learned in your training, what the focus was, and kind of the underlying beliefs and theories for?
Before I do that, I also just wanted to mention that in South Africa, when we were training, the focus was NDT. So I had a very, very good grounding in NDT, and I'm very grateful for that. But in a medic is a little bit different. So I'll refer to it as medic, but then I'll refer to it as a crevice medic exercise because that's how it's been for me all these years. Medic was invented by a brilliant man between 1971-73, and his name is Ramon Cuevas. He was actually working in Caracas, Venezuela, mostly with children with Down syndrome. And he came up with this technique to try and speed up the development of these children with Down syndrome. And then he started to apply it to all children who had delays. And the amazing thing about medic is you don't need the child's cooperation. You don't need their conscious thought. Because if you think of our movements, they're all automatic. And that, I think, is a little bit different in to conductive ed, where conductive education, you are using a lot of the child's conscious thought. So basically, we start to initiate a movement or we give them some input, and the child then uses all the automatic responses and their reflexes and their gravitational responses, and they will complete the movement. A lot of the time, we need the gravitational forces and sensory information to help guide the children in these movements. And we also start from very proximal, and then we move very distal. So they initially, we give the child a lot of support, and then eventually we would reduce the support more and more and more until the child's doing the exercise on their own. Medic also has got a very, very strong sensory input, which makes a lot of good changes in the brain itself, a lot of strong proprioceptive input, vestibular input.
So that's probably one of the criticisms that I've seen of CME is that you don't, it's not child-led and it's not around functional tasks. It is kind of working on that automatic postural system. So
actually it is, the funny thing is it's not an all or nothing technique. So yes, everything is functional. And that I think is quite a bit of a misrepresentation because everything we do is related to function. There's not one, nothing that's not, you know, that isn't related to function. We constantly are working on sitting, getting into sitting, getting out of sitting, crawling, weight bearing through hands, high kneeling, in getting into standing, steps, weight bearing, balance. It's all functional. There's nothing that isn't. What is the other thing you mentioned? There was
I said that it's not child-led.
Oh my goodness. So when the babies are little, it can't always be child-led. We have to teach the children how to move. So yes, NDT, you guide them through the movement, but so does medic. But medic is just a little bit stronger in guiding and direction and correcting the direction. And it is a lot more intensive. There's a lot of set exercises. So there's a start to the exercise and there's a finish. So it's almost like having a toolbox of exercises. There's over 500 exercises in all, and you guide and you can see how they do the movement, if they can do most of the movement themselves, how they grade the movement, and you can actually use that movement to evaluate how the child is progressing. And with regards to the child's child-led, the children become very much part of the exercises, and as they grow, they love the exercises. It gives them confidence. There's a lot of talk about the crying aspect of it, which is something I actually really wanted to address as well, because we don't need the child's cooperation for this. And a lot of babies cry. They cry because they're uncomfortable, they don't feel confident. And we know that if we go to the gym and we've got a personal trainer pushing us, we can communicate it. They can't communicate it. So in the beginning, it's really, really hard for them. They're not sure of the handling. They're not sure of what to expect. But the kids, they settle down and they end up absolutely loving it. They love it because they feel confident in themselves. They feel that they can move. It just, the kids that I work with become so emotionally stable. It just amazes me.
Is that, do you think, because the structure of the exercises is so grounding?
It's grounding. There's emotional stability. They're able to self-regulate themselves. With medic, there's a lot of changes in all the other areas of the child, not just the physical system. They brighten up their cognitive function, their speech. The brain, it almost jumpstarts the brain because of the intensity and because of all the sensory inputs that go with it.
So maybe talk a little bit about the intensity. What does medic therapy look like for a child going through it?
So with me, I do an hour-long medic session with the kids. So we go through several exercises, and they are repeated. Normally repeat them about 5 times each exercise, and it's intensive. So there generally isn't play, but I'm, as I said before, quite a holistic therapist, and I do have distractions for the children while we're working. We do have fun while we are working, and it's one exercise after another, after another, after another for an hour. And these kids, they strengthen up so quickly. They tolerate an hour very easily. And again, I don't feel that any kind of distraction will harm them in any way. Although traditional medic therapists don't really want the distraction, they don't really need the distraction. But I do believe that if it's an automatic response, it's between me and the brain, and I don't always need the emotional side there. So if they want to be distracted and their bodies are moving naturally and the brain is connecting, that's fine. I'm happy to work that way.
So you're doing an hour once or twice a week?
So the more intensive you do it, the better the results will be. And that's with any therapy. Optimally, 2 to 3 times a week. And that's when the home exercise program comes into being. The parents are supposed to do a home exercise program. Every single day, they are supposed to do at least once or twice a day. The more they do, the better for the child. Again, this is a real world. And some parents choose to rather have the therapist do the therapy, and they will just have more sessions per week than do the therapy themselves. And again, the home exercise program is nowhere near as intensive or as difficult as what they get during their therapy session.
So do the parents go home with the blocks and boards and do
sometimes
a replica
yes.
of what you're doing?
Sometimes yes. If they can manage that, then yes, they do.
Do you work segmentally, cephalotocaudal, with your medic therapy? Is that how it's structured, or is it not quite that?
No, it's not. Every child is very different. And yes, obviously with the babies, we start doing a lot more of the core and the neck. But we pretty quickly jump onto, you know, the standing. We don't wait always, or I don't always wait for sitting to be fully formed to go on to standing and walking.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe that some of the higher level skills help to impact the lower level skills, but that's when the parent home exercise program comes into being. I can be working on the standing and walking, and they can be doing some of the simpler medic exercises with regards to trunk strength that is necessary.
Right. And so when you are working on those higher level skills, you are likely to be eliciting some abnormal movement patterns and that sort of thing.
No.
No?
No. So the one thing about medic is you really are getting alignment of the body, and you are stretching muscles while moving functionally. We don't lie kids down and passively stretch them. Mm-hmm. We stretch them within the movements they're in. We also don't modify all those primitive reflex and abnormal patterns directly. It's done indirectly. So it's for example, we have those narrow boards and the children are standing on narrow boards and there's a lot of input going to their brain saying, here is the two narrow boards. I can strongly feel the proprioceptive input coming in through my ankles and it's going all the way up to my brain and this is my center of balance. It's very strong. This is where I need to be. This is my alignment. And it really gives them that strong sense of midline and where they should be standing. So it corrects a lot of these ATNRs and STNRs and all these other abnormal reflexes gradually are corrected. And the child's posture turns out to be beautiful. Absolutely beautiful in midline, in control, a lot of beautiful extension of their trunk. I find I've never had a child have to have any kind of major hip surgeries or any kind of surgeries orthopedically because the stresses and the stretches on the muscle are equal and balanced. Yeah. And the child responds really well to all of this input.
So how long do you see children for therapy?
Again, it varies. So I can start children from very young, from 3 months, and I can see them for as long as they are able to physically assist me. If they're more standing and walking children, I can carry on with them for many, many years. But physically, if they haven't developed as well as they could have developed, and I'm still taking a lot of weight and it's getting too difficult for me, unfortunately, there is a limit with medic as to how long you can carry on with doing the medic exercises if they're not fully weight-bearing.
Right, because that was one of my thoughts when I saw some of the exercises, is you need to be quite physically strong to be handling the kids.
And it's not only a physical strength, because I have some fathers who come in and these are big weightlifting fathers and they cannot do the exercises. It's not just physical strength, it's handling skills. And as a therapist, we know I can feel in my hands, I can balance a child just with a slight movement of my wrist, even though I'm holding them at their ankles. I can feel every bit of their movements.
Yeah, maybe it would be good as well to talk about which kind of kids are appropriate or are not appropriate for medic.
There really isn't anyone that shouldn't try medic. I've worked with children with spinal abnormalities or illnesses. I've worked with children with CP, Down syndrome, chromosomal abnormalities, SMA. Every child will respond. And the only negative I would say is, again, the size of the child, the age of the child. It gets to a point where maybe it's too difficult for the therapist to work with a child. Other than that, pretty much any child can do CME or medic therapy.
How would it be different in a child with a spinal cord injury?
So the strange thing is, we're not sure exactly how, but sometimes with the little ones with spinal cord injury, we do tend to get some mild connections made. I don't know how. Maybe there's some incomplete injury. But I had a little one who had transverse myelitis and started seeing him when he was about 5 months. And he can stand now. He's, I think, 12 or 13. And he can actually stand and let go and stand by himself for short periods of time. He runs around in crutches. He's absolutely great. But when he started, he didn't have any movement in his legs. So, yep, it might have been a bit of an incomplete lesion, but it took a long time. But we got connections.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. And that also brings up one of the other queries that I've seen about medic, which is that you guys don't use orthotics or assistive devices as part of your treatment. And I know I saw you had said that you would not use it as part of your treatment, but use it, allow children to use it in between sessions. Do you want to just expand on that a little bit?
Right. So traditionally, most of the medic therapists don't use orthotics during the treatment session. You want the child to be working all their muscles, and having an orthotic on kind of limits how much sensory input they're getting, how much movement they're getting at their ankles or wherever the orthotic is. But I do bring in orthotics occasionally. I am holistic again, and I do sometimes bring in gaiters, whether it be leg or arm, just to assist me on getting to the next point. But generally, I want their feet on the narrow boards, on the blocks, on the balls. I want them to get that input. I want them to feel the full range of movement. I want to break up reflexes and tone. So it's best that they don't have the orthotics. I do understand that orthotics have their purpose at times to stretch out muscles while I'm not working with them. So I'm happy for the children to use them. And when it comes to walkers and other devices, to give the children movement, I'm fine with that.
That's more because you've kind of got a holistic approach rather than that being the general philosophy of CME therapists.
Correct.
Okay. And I guess that with any therapy, when you've kind of very narrow in your toolbox, you might apply things differently too if you've got a broader perspective.
Right.
The medic's been around now for quite some time. I was just wondering if there's any research or anybody who's done any case studies or that sort of thing that's been published around it.
Mm-hmm. That's a very big question. And unfortunately, there is nothing at all. Nothing at all. So it doesn't mean just because there isn't research that you don't do it. I think we need to have open minds, and we need to use our minds and say, if it works, let's look into it.
Well, there's always a big gap between what's happening clinically and what's happening in the research world. But I think there are people that are trying to close that gap. And I guess as therapists, it
all revolves around money, unfortunately.
Well, no, I don't think it does. I think that as therapists, we have an obligation to be taking good notes and producing case studies and getting the information out there, because not everything has to be a randomized controlled trial. Sometimes it can be just a case series that if you present enough of them, you can start to get a picture clinically of what's working.
Right.
Yeah. But anyway.
And I guess that's maybe more where we should go. And I think maybe therapists should be more educated about that. Most people don't.
No, it's pretty hard. Everybody's busy in their own practices doing it. That's why I was so impressed with Judy Carmack when I interviewed her, because she's just really managed to take what she's doing and put the, you know, gather the data and put it out there and out there in the medical journals to share. It's not an easy thing to do, but I think it's an important thing to do. Can we just get back to medic, because the one thing I didn't ask you was if people who are trained in medic need to have a therapy background. So I know there's some of the techniques out there, like the nut benil, where you don't actually need to be a therapist first, you can just do the training. So how does that work with CME?
So that's a very interesting question as well. Things with medic have changed over the years and do continue to change all the time. It used to be that kinesiologists could do it, but generally it's physios and OTs who do train in medic and do become the experts in the technique itself.
But to get your certification, you don't have to have a prior qualification?
Generally, you do. So the most important thing is that we train as many people as we can in medic, CME, or any other therapy out there. The more people who are out there working with children and changing their lives, the better. That's the most important thing, as far as I'm concerned. So whatever I can do to share the knowledge and to teach people is what I'd like to do. I'd like to reach as many children as I can around the world with this technique. And people must just contact me, and I will do everything I can to make sure that people have the information and are able to help children.
So if people are interested in learning more, they can contact you, and you can kind of put them onto
anytime
onto training anytime. That's happening maybe closer to them. Or okay,
correct.
That's awesome. Correct. Okay, so do you want to just expand a little bit more on how Medic is different to Bobath NDT?
One of the things that's great about having Medic in your toolbox of things to do is that it is a toolbox in itself. So you've got like 500 different exercises to draw from. And as a young therapist coming into the field of pediatrics, you can actually go into a session with a list of 5 to 10 exercises to do with the child. You already know what you're going to do. You know how the exercise is going to start, how it's going to finish, how many repetitions. And it is easier in some way to apply. Gradually, you do start to understand why you're applying the exercise and how to apply it and how to change it. But to start out, you've got your toolbox. You can go in there with confidence, knowing what you're going to do. NDT is a little bit harder, and it takes time as well with both the techniques to know what you're doing. But as a young therapist going in with your NDT, it's you go in with the child, and it's like, okay, how am I going to guide the child? Where am I going to start? How am I going to finish? It's a little bit more complicated. So Medic does simplify things for therapists in certain ways, in that the exercises are more structured.
Mm-hmm. And what about the actual equipment, like the box and the board and that sort of thing? Is there, I think it's standardized, isn't it? Is there a
very standardized make
it, or do you buy it from somewhere?
Yeah, you are supposed to buy the Medic equipment. And it's very, very standardized. There are, and you can get multiple sets of the boxes. So there's a big board, cubes, two long sticks, two big boxes, a small box, balls, and silky piece of equipment, and a table. And it can go with you anywhere. It can be done anywhere. You can convert a table at home into a Medic table by using a mat from a pack and play or Portacrip. So it's very, it's very take with you go. You can do it anywhere you are.
How would therapists know where to get that stuff from?
Again, you contact me and I would set you up with exactly how and where to get your equipment.
Perfect. Who at the moment is noteworthy or somebody that you're paying attention to?
I actually recently did a course called General Movement Assessment, which I highly recommend. If you haven't done it, it's just a very good understanding of how movement actually develops in utero.
Is that the Prechtel?
Yes, it is. And it just will inspire you and it makes you think.
Which would be your go-to books?
I'm a very practical person, but I do have a nice little library of books. Not to say that I always refer to the library. I need to see things and how they work. So even explaining Medic to you on the podcast just doesn't do it justice. And we know that for any technique. So you can read it in the book and it's good to have the knowledge and the basic books, Campbell and Lois Bly, Shepherd, Ticklin, but it's also good to expand a little bit and get books on, especially ones like Floor Time, how to engage and how to interact with children. The Out of Sync Child, by Carolyn Stark-Kranovitz, which talks about sensory integration therapy. The neuroplasticity books by Norman Doidge. Also, there's one book I read a long time ago about behavioral intervention for the young child with autism by Catherine Maurice, which really helped me understand a little bit more about IBI and ABA. Christine Roman Lancey's Cortical Visual Impairment book is another great one. So those are some of my books that I enjoy. The one NDT book by Lois Bly, the baby treatment book, I think is excellent for everyone to have.
Yeah, the Lois Bly books always come up as popular. Yep.
There is a medic book. There is a book that you can purchase with lots and lots of the exercises in it. But again, having the exercises and having the Lois Bly book doesn't teach you how to do the handling. You actually have to take the course.
Course. What is that book called, Jane?
Oh, the medic book. Now you're going to ask me. I do not have it with me right now. But it's Cuevas Medic Exercise, and it's by Ramon Cuevas.
Okay. I'll see if I can find that put up on the website.
And you will see a picture of me in it at the back.
Oh, that's cool. I thought we might just quickly jump to the exercise, the questions. I think you've answered a few of them, but
sure.
Let's just run through them quickly anyway. So the first question says, what do you think the negatives or drawbacks are with CME and with the CME approach? Which group of children would you not use it on?
There isn't a child that you can't try CME on. Again, size is the only problem with the kids. If they've gotten to an age where they're too big or they're not able to assist you, it can become quite difficult to work with a child at that point.
And then a similar question, is medic good for kids who are 18 months old and have spastic diplegia? What would you work on more, walking or core?
Both. You've got to work on the underlying basic skills to support the body to be able to stand up and walk. Now, and sorry, 18 months is late, not late to start, but not too late. Medic, we actually focus quite a lot of extension. We're not talking about abnormal extension. We're talking about normal functional extension. And if a child does not have normal functional extension, they're not going to walk. We know that the kids with CP all are pulled into so much flexion. So they need the extension. They need to be able to go through the full range of extension from fully flexed to fully extended to be able to hold themselves upright, to have stability, to stand up and walk. One of the exercises we do is called trunk extension, where you do get just work on pure trunk extension. Once a child can hold themselves fully up and you can now move from holding their trunk to holding their thighs and they've got full extension, then we know they're good to start doing standing and walking exercises. Until you can hold them at their thighs, they still have a lot of work to do with the extension. And of course, we've got to still work abdominal and rotation. So we work a lot of rotation, a lot of getting up through rotation to come up into sitting. And yep, some of the exercises seem to be similar to NDT exercises, but they are more intense. There's a lot of overlap. It's not totally different from NDT.
The next question, which runs into that, is do you believe that CME and Bobath approaches can be used together in a session?
Of course they can. A lot of the therapy techniques intertwine themselves. As I said before, there's no perfect technique. A lot of my colleagues do NDT. My best friend, Bernadette, has a very, very strong NDT background, and she is my other level 3 therapist that I trained with. She uses it still. She intertwines the two together with beautiful outcomes, absolutely beautiful outcomes.
A lot of what you would sort of be moving down the levels of control would be what we would call key points of control in NDT, you know, holding at certain points below the level of ability. And it also reminds me actually of targeted training. Have you heard of targeted training with Dr. Penny Butler in the UK? That's really interesting.
No, I haven't.
So she takes she developed the SATCO, which is the segmental assessment of trunk control, which is just, I think, becoming a little bit better known. She started with a standing frame where kids actually sit in it initially to start with. They've fixed them into the standing frame, which has a rocker bottom base just below the point of control. And then the kids take that home and practice rocking in it, and then they gradually move that point of control all the way down as they develop control above that level, which is really interesting.
So I do know, and I do remember many years ago, Ramon was looking at creating something similar to that. And I do that kind of thing with the children that I work with. As I said before, I do allow them to have standing frames and walkers because they need to be standing. They need the weight bearing on their hips for their hips to form. And I do. I gradually have them remove the straps bit by bit by bit. And they do. They need to work on their trunk extension. They need to be standing up against gravity.
What was interesting with Penny's standing frame, though, is that it's on an actual rocker bottom base. So it's a dynamic movement and not just a static stand.
Right.
Really interesting.
Which is fantastic.
It does remind me a bit of that. But I guess, as you say, everything kind of blends into each other, doesn't it? We're all kind of working from different theories, but maybe on the same things.
Right.
So there's somebody asked, hi Joanne, are there any plans for offering CME training in New Zealand?
Of course. I will, as I said before, I'd love to support anybody who would like to learn more about CME or MEDEC.
So do you know if there's anybody who's trained in that in New Zealand? Or
I do not know of anyone who's trained in New Zealand. I do know that there are a lot of therapists in Australia that are training right now in CME, but in Sydney itself.
What about the rest of the world?
So a lot in South America. There is a lot that are being trained right now in Paris, in London, in the States, certain areas, there are therapists trained. In LA, there's quite a few. Where else? There are pockets of therapists here, there, and everywhere.
South Africa?
No. No therapists in South Africa. They're very, very strong NDT believers there.
Okay. You did speak a little bit about Brechtel and research and that sort of thing, but is there anything else that you're excited about that you think we should know about?
I'm trying to get involved with a lot of the younger therapists in Toronto coming out of university. And things have changed a lot. There aren't that many big centers like there used to be. There isn't a lot of support. I know in the States they have a lot of support through the American Academy of Physical Therapy, where they have mentors. And I'm not sure if they have that all over the world. But some of these young therapists will go out into the communities and are working without the guidance that I was lucky to have in my first few years. And I think it's important that they do find a mentor to help them, that they do some of the basic and practical courses, for example, courses in torticollis. And yes, I do use MEDEC for torticollis. Yes, I do use MEDEC for toe walkers and many other orthopedic concerns. And they should be doing courses in all these different areas. And that is one of the other projects that I'm working on right now. So I'm in the middle of working on a online course that will actually break things down for therapists. I'm starting with 0 to 6 months. We're going through every month. We're going through exercises. We're going through the different conditions that they'll see and actual practical solutions, because that's what they need. They need the practical solutions. It's great to have all the books, but you need to know what to do when you go into that therapy session.
So is that going to be based a lot around MEDEC, or is that going to be sort of a combination of everything?
It's going to be a holistic approach. Everything that I've learned, I am going to be sharing, and because the child is a whole, and we need to remember that. There's so much we can learn from our colleagues.
That's exciting. Sounds really good. You'll have to let me know when there's more about it. And the other thing that I really thought would be awesome is if you would pop one or two case studies on the clinical corner at Wired on Development, because I think it would be lovely to kind of track that sort of thing, like a torticollis or a idiopathic toe walker, with different approaches, and just to kind of see outcomes would be awesome.
Sure.
I just really wanted to say thank you so much for spending the time just sharing a little bit of your knowledge with us. I really appreciate that. And it's been really, really awesome just learning a little bit more. So thank you. I hope you enjoyed that interview. Head on over to the Clinical Corner to check out Joanne's case study for a bit more insight into this amazing technique. And if you'd like to get seriously smart, don't forget to sign up for Seriously Smart Snippets, delivered weekly to your inbox. They take less than a minute to read. Snippets are taken from the Wired on Development interviews and delivered randomly to your inbox so that you absorb knowledge without any effort. You don't have to write it down or even try to remember it, because I'll send it to you again to make sure you integrate it into your memory bank. Now that's seriously smart.